Shiva, there's an issur of doing the ma'isa of kibbutz and giyud. After Shiva, there's no issur of doing the ma'isa of kibbutz and giyud. The issur is wearing begadim which are mechubasim and wearing begadim which are mechubasim. It's this context of wearing things which were mechubasim which led to the famous practice that we're familiar with, and that's the idea of putting something on beforehand. So, you know, this, the real mock of this whole thing of what we know from the 9 days comes from the Ramah, Nuchat Avelus, that the Ramah writes that since wearing begadim which are mechubasim, they were just washed, they weren't really pressed, they weren't really with detergent, it's not a real issur anyway, so the minhag is to let a non-oval put it on for a little while beforehand. So since it's only because minhag anyway, so it's not the real giyut, the Gemara says it's really also mikvah din for shloshim, so the minhag became to be ma'at for somebody else to put it on for a couple of minutes, and then the oval puts it on. So the poskim extrapolate from that Ramah, we got to be the 9 days. 9 days, so it's also only a minute. 9 days, the only thing that's Bikra Din is Shavuot Shechabo. So therefore, the minute has become to permit the heart to find the non oval during the 9 days. So we have to be the non avail ourselves, we have to do it before Rosh Chodesh. So if you put on a beged from before Rosh Chodesh, so then it's okay. That's not considered to be wearing a new beged during the 9 days. That's the source of that minute. How long does the person have to wear a beged? It doesn't say how long it has to be. So the item is pretty makeableness in the 9 days. We put it on for a little while beforehand, a couple minutes beforehand, but we assume that that's called a non-freshly washed clothing. So again, so during Shiva and Shloshim, there's an Isser of Kibbutz, that's Me'ikra Din during Shiva. After Shiva, so the end of Shloshim, there's an Isser Mikra Din of Giyutz. So that Isser of Giyutz is only to wear Begadim Neguhatim. What about past Shloshim? Is there any Isser whatsoever? So the Ramah quotes a minhag that the Ramah says that the Ashkenazim have a minhag not to get new clothes and not to wear Big Day Shabbos for the entire year of Avelus. The person is in Yud Beis Chodesh, so he shouldn't buy new clothes and shouldn't even wear Big Day Shabbos for the whole year. So they're not wearing new clothes, so the poskim say that means to buy something fancy. He's going to buy a fancy tuxedo, a brand new suit or something he doesn't really need. That should try. One should try to avoid during Yud Beis Chodesh. But a person needs his pants just ripped. He doesn't have a pair of pants, so he's allowed to buy a new pair of pants. Allowed to buy a new shirt during Yud Beis Chodesh. That would be okay. What about not wearing Big Day Shabbos? So here, the Ramah is assuming that Avelim don't wear Big Day Shabbos. So this Ramah really should bring to mind another Ramah, Ramah or Achayim, about Shabbos Chazon. Where the Ramah writes that the minhag is that we don't wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazon. So we don't follow that practice of the Ramah. Why don't we follow that practice of the Ramah? So the many poskim write that that was only true in the olden days. Not everybody was able to afford Shabbos clothes. So in the normal circumstances, sometimes you would walk into shul on Shabbos and you see not everyone was wearing a suit. Sometimes people were wearing weekday clothes and didn't have money for Shabbos clothes. So if you see a guy in shul wearing weekday clothes, you don't immediately think that he's an avelus. You don't immediately think, oh, Shabbos clothes on gefal. But it's not a zeh. Baruch Hashem, Ach Shadar, everybody has money to buy Shabbos clothes. So if you see a guy, everyone's wearing a suit, and this guy, you walk into a shul, this guy's wearing his weekday clothes, so you realize, this guy's an avel, that would be like avelus for hesia. So the way our socioeconomic situation is this man is there, we don't follow this Ramah, the Legabi Shabbos Chazon, and we don't follow this Ramah, Legabi Avelus. But that meaning is that we wear regular Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazon, and we wear Shabbos clothes on during Avelus as well, because for us, that would constitute avelus for hesia. But according to that original, initial minhag of the Ramah, the minhag was not to wear new clothes for the entire Beis Chodesh, not to wear Shabbos clothes during the Beis Chodesh either. The second Isser, which is really in a sense unique to Shloshim, is the Isser of Tisperis. We're all familiar with that, the Isser of getting haircuts. So here the Gemara tells us that Avel for the whole Shloshim is not permitted to get a haircut or shave, those other types of removal here, that would be a problem. But here the Gemara says that this Isser does schlep out, it extends into the Yud Beis Chodesh also, but not entirely. It goes to the point of Achi Garbu Chavero, that it goes to the point that a person is not allowed to get a haircut until he reaches the point where he looks messy. So he has to pass Shloshim first of all, that's no question. Even if he looks messy into Shloshim, that's a problem. Shloshim has to pass, and then after Shloshim is over, if he also reaches Achi Garbu Chavero, then it's going to be okay. So how much is Achi Garbu Chavero? So the Ramah quotes different minhagim, there are different customs in Europe, how long that is. It's very hard to give an ironclad answer to this question. I mean, your stomach should depend on the time and place, you know, how it depends on the person, depends on the last tikkun. It's hard to give an exact answer in terms of days and weeks. At what point do we say that that it's no longer, that it's already reached the point of actually go over chaverov? Because Yosef writes that actually go over chaverov doesn't mean someone has to actually be rude and tell him that it was messy. If he knows that everyone would tell him, just that everyone has their cheres not to tell him, that's also called actually go over chaverov. So the earlier folks already made this ha'ara that if a person shaves, so actually go over chaverov is going to become obviously much less than for a person who doesn't shave. If a person has a beard, so it's going to take a while for his beard starts to look so unruly that people would tell him to go trim it. Whereas if a person shaves all the time, so we have to have a day until he's going to be ready to point of actually go b'chaverah. So it's this was the source for why many people are make up as manazer, they're right after shloshim, so they shave. And if the maiden is still going to hit that right after shloshim, because they probably don't look like such a mess yet, but many people will just shave immediately after shloshim, because at that point they change chigar b'chaverah. So there's a machlekes in the poskim. Because the person has to wait each and every time to reach another Yachigar Bechaver. Let's say it takes, it takes 5 days for his beard to get really, you know, to look like really like a mess. So once it looks like a mess one time, he had a head to the shave. Now he can shave every time, every day. Well, you have to wait each 5 days Yachigar Bechaver. Let's say my haircut. Let's say it takes you 3 months to look like a mess. So you have to wait every 3 months to get a haircut. Well, once you reach the first 3 months and you had a head there, so then it's going to be head to Gomer. So that was the big machlekes of poskim. So it would be a snare. I would have said lahakov. Shailim the rabbanon. So Rav Moshe was not lahachmer in this. Rav Moshe said he thinks that the correct thing to do is to be machmer. Others disagreed. So the oilim was pretty makel about this. And during avelus, right after shloshim, they shave and then they just keep on shaving every day. So they're basically assuming against the Rav Moshe. So this hefter about you, this din about you, Rav Chaverov. So this became publicized, became famous. So even though the Zilin but they also became famous by the Rav's famous kulin. The Rav had a chiddush when it came to the Avelus of a Sfira, 3 weeks. So the Rav was a brisker, so the Rav held that even the Minhagim have to have a halachic category, so they have to stand a minig, that you don't shave, you don't do this, you don't do that. It means that apidin is a certain sug of Avelus that were being noeg. So what was the type of Avelus that were being noeg during Sfira? So the Rav said, the Avelus is the Avelus of Yud Beis Chodesh. Shivitzna, Shloshimitzna, is the Avelus of Yud Beis Chodesh. So it follows all the Kulas and the Chumras of Yud Beis Chodesh. And one of the Kulas of Yud Beis Chodesh is actually Gav HaChaverah. So the Rav said, in the olden days, when people had beards, so you took a haircut Erev Pesach, you didn't take a haircut to Lag B'Omer, because then you didn't trim your beard to Lag B'Omer, because you didn't look so messy in 5 weeks. But if a guy shaves every day, so we have to, by the time Pesach is over, he looks like a mess already. So that's a Medina Chigav HaChaverah. So then Mikra did, it would be permitted for him to shave at that point. So others disagree with the Rav. Others held that the lumps may be right in terms of Echaz Avelos, but it may not necessarily be true in terms of Sfira. Maybe Sfira is the 3 weeks, but that's instituted as a minute of Yud Beis Chodesh. It was instituted as a minister, you shouldn't take a haircut. It wasn't put into such a formal category in terms of Echaz Avelos. Aisha was making for other reasons. If it's Mokham Hefsted, maybe you're allowed to, you don't keep in hugging the Mokham, it's going to be interfere with your finances. It's a different story. But that basic Hefsted that the Rav had in terms of invoking the principle of Achigar B'Chaverev, which is really a din in Yud Beis Chodesh, and plugging into Sphere in 3 weeks, so that was really his Chiddush. Included in Tisperas was the whole discussion in the Gemara about Nefilas Tiparnayim, not cutting nails during Avelus. What's the halacha? So, we assume the chumrah, we try to avoid it, we at least if you use a kli, cuts the bites of nails, but we should or shouldn't, it's a different story. But in terms of halacha, that would be okay, but in terms of using a kli, using a nail clipper or a scissors, that would be a problem. The exception to this rule would be a woman who has to go to the mikveh. We have an age-old minhag that before a woman goes to the mikveh, so she cuts her nails. So we assume that she could cut her nails before going to the mikveh also. So there are different opinions in the poskim. What exactly does that mean, that she's allowed to cut her nails? So there are the shaila, does that mean that she has to do it on a day a goy? Like Shabbos is a whole lumdus about that. Some poskim say she has to do it on a day a goy, and some say she could do it on a day, she could do it even on a day another Yisraelis, and some say Tata, she could do it even by herself at the minhag. That the chumrah of cutting nails doesn't apply to the Malka Mitzvah. So there are different opinions as to what to do. I think that, my guess is I think people are pretty mikvah about it. They just cut the nails themselves before going to the mikvah. So whether Machlekes Nirshon and whether an Avos allowed to comb his hair, because maybe that's like tantamount to his spirit, about a chumrah. Actually, Gerber Chavir is allowed to comb his hair. So So some Rishonim wanted to compare to Shabbos. Just as on Shabbos, you're not allowed to comb your hair or brush your hair because you're going to pull out some of the hairs. So who did not be you're not allowed to comb your hair and brush your hair when you're an Ovel because you're going to pull out some of the hairs. So the Rishonim, most of the Rishonim said that Dimyon is not really true. The Tosfos writes that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to pull out hair. Here, the answer is to make yourself look nice, give yourself a nice haircut. If you're combing your hair and a couple of hairs fall out, whether it's a psik ratio, a low psik ratio, nichol, that's not a beautifying way of doing things. That's not the beauty of getting a haircut. So that was never included in the Yisrael altogether. So we're knowing lahotah. We pass in Shulchan Aruch that a person is permitted to comb their hair even in the middle of Shiva itself. So that's not accepted. In fact, that was what we mentioned a little while ago, the minhag that the Rama quotes of not taking a shower for the whole month of Shloshim. So we said that we don't follow that. From the old days, if such a minhag existed. So one of the reasons that the Tosfos say for that minhag, I think there's a Ruah writes this reason, was that we're afraid it's a gezeira, not thinking to get a haircut, like I said, like some Rishonim say, it was a gezeira, you're going to comb the hair. If you let them wash the body and wash the hair, they may come to comb the hair. And that Rishon who said that was assuming that it's also for an oval to comb his hair. Of course, if we pass in Shulchan Aruch, that even an oval and Shiva is allowed to comb the hair, so then that's obviously not a good reason to be machmer in that minhag in the first place. So again, we pass in the halacha that the person would be permitted to comb the hair, and it's not really the same as Shabbos. The next iser, which we find applied after Shiva throughout Shloshim and throughout Yud Beis Chodesh of the Imo, is probably one of the most difficult areas to really put our fingers on in terms of defining what exactly falls under the iser, and that's the iser of Knisa Lebeis HaMishta, Lebeis HaSimcha. The Gemara says in Maseches Mor Kotam that an Ovel for the whole Shloshim, an Ovel for the Yud Beis Chodesh for parents, is now allowed to go into a Beis HaSimcha. The Gemara uses the phrase Beis HaSimcha and Simcha Sareya. The Gemara throws around a whole bunch of different phrases as to different things that an Ovel is not allowed to do, different in Yonim of Simcha. The question is, what exactly does that mean? What exactly constitutes a Beis HaMishta, and what doesn't constitute a Beis HaMishta? So we shouldn't feel bad that we're not sure what the answer to that question is. Tyson himself says they're not sure the answer to that question. Tyson themselves throw up their hands and they say, a chasna, yeah, that's probably a Beis HaSimcha. Is a bris a Beis HaSimcha? Such a simcha, a bris, a yim, you know, they're not sure. They throw up their hands. A lot of these quasi-sudas of simcha, they really consider to be Beis HaSimcha, they're not. So the Ramah writes that we're also not 100% sure what really constitutes a Beis HaSimcha. So the Ramah says that certain things are clearly off-limits, the chasna is off-limits, but other things like brisim, so he writes, well, if the bris is like in the house of the Ovel, so that's probably less of a simcha. If it's made like a shul, a nice fancy place, and maybe that's more of a simcha, so then it would be appropriate for him perhaps to refrain, to go through these quasi-sudas of simcha. That's at least the minhag that the Ramah quotes. The Ramah himself concedes that there are others who have different minhagim in this area. So again, if it's something like such a clear-cut simcha, so he shouldn't go at all. If it's a quasi-simcha, so if it's in his own house, then maybe it would be permitted for him to go. There is a whole discussion that the Poskim have, but to touch on something hopefully we'll talk about a little bit later, about Shabbos, and you have these Beis HaSimcha Shabbos that come up on Shabbos, so the Shabbos play any role in terms of mitigating the Yisr. So Poskim write two Svaras to be a little bit more makil on Shabbos than during the week in terms of these Beis HaSimcha Shabbos. So one of the Svaras Lahakil is that it could be it's not even also during the week in the first place. That means we're not even sure that the Bris is really a Beis HaSimcha. So things which were not 100% convinced is really also in the first place. It's a chumra liyam, but maybe the chumra wasn't instituted by Makom Einik Shabbos. But a more thorough halachic hagdara is to claim that maybe it would be like a violation of Avelus for Hesiel. Something hopefully we'll talk about as we go on. But in Shabbos, you're now allowed to do a public demonstration of Avelus. So sometimes not going to a Beis HaSimcha may really constitute a public violation of Avelus. The question is, well, is that really true? Is it really going to be a public demonstration of Avelus or not? Or it's going to depend on the time and place and primarily the person. Depends what kind of a person it is. So if it's a very famous person, so if everyone's going to realize that he's not here, he's a relative, he's not here, everyone's going to think, Gavalt, he's not here, so it must be because he's an Avelus, so that'll smack of Avelus for Hesi and Shabbos. If you're not such a well-known person, so if you don't show up to the Kiddush, so the whole world's not going to realize that you're not there, so that's not considered to be really an Avelus of Hesi. So if you go with that second Mahalach, you're going to have to really size up each and every case. It's a Tshuva, not mistaken, quotes a Shaila about going to a Bris on Shabbos. So he says that what happened was the person came to the Shalom Zachal, whether he should have gone or shouldn't have gone is irrelevant. So he comes to the Shalom Zachal, so everyone realizes he's in town for Shabbos. Everyone knows he's good friends, everyone knows he slept out for the night at 11 o'clock at night to the Shalom Zachal, and he's not going to show up for the Bris. So everyone's going to say, aha, why didn't he come to the Bris? Because he's an Ovel and it's an Avel for Hestia. So yeah, mamash, the time and place, each case is going to be different. Sometimes it's going to be for hesed for one person, not for hesed for another person. It's going to depend on the context. There are some other folks who say that for hesed doesn't even play a role here, that the issue of hesed for hesed may not even apply to this for some technical reason. We'll get to, hopefully, when we speak about hesed for hesed. So again, it's hard to define what exactly constitutes the basis of simcha in the first place. And then, even in simcha loma, that something smacks a little bit of basis of simcha. So Shabbos may be a mitigating factor, at least if the issue of Fahesia is present. There is a machlekes in the Rishonim that was, is there anything wrong with attending a Beis HaSimcha, but not participating there, not actually eating at the Beis HaSimcha. So some Rishonim say, if you don't eat, there's no Simcha. Ain't Simcha b'achil ushtia. And others say, no, they just ain't a nichnas the Beis HaSimcha. Just the entering into the Beis HaSimcha is also inappropriate. So we pass in Shulchan Aruch that an Avo really shouldn't should really try to stay away from a Beis HaSimcha at all, even if he's not going to eat there. But sometimes you have a setup where it's not really a Beis HaSimcha. Like let's say you have a chasana. So which part of the chasana is the Beis HaSimcha? So it's usually assumed that the dinner, that's the Beis HaSimcha. The chuppah, that's the ceremony, that's not the simcha. So for the ceremony, that's okay. So the Ramah himself quotes this, and the Ramah says that, but if there's a lot of singing and dancing, before the ceremony, before the dinner, so maybe that's also inappropriate for the Avil to be present. So there's not as that. There's probably grounds lahakel for a Avil to attend the chuppah. That's what the Minhag HaOlam is today. That if it's close, somebody feels that he really wants to go to, so we permit him to go to the chuppah. And the reason being is that there's not that much dancing or singing at the chuppah, like the violin guy who plays the plays the Heidel Diddly Dumps or whatever, so that's not the simcha. And so as soon as the chuppah is over, they break the glass, so the Avol should leave. He shouldn't stay around for the dancing and the singing back to the Yichud room. That's what I think the Minhag HaOlam is today. The Rav Moh quotes that Shaila about eating with a Mishamshim. Let's say a person attends a Beis HaSimcha, but he doesn't, he's working, he's not a guest, he's a worker. So there may be grounds for Hakel on that. So here it's clear that there's a little bit of a misapplication of that principle. What that means is, Rav Moh was talking about, the guy's mamash the cook, I mean, he's working, he's a waiter, he's in the kitchen, and he's eating with the waiters, he's not eating out, doesn't have a place card. He's eating inside the kitchen, and he's sweating away by the oven, and he's working. Okay, but he wants to be at the chasana. So that maybe the ground will help him. Whereas some people have this idea that you're allowed to come to a chasana, and you put down a napkin, you put down a cup, you put down a fork. So I'm a chbin mishamish. So I'm a waiter. Come on, that's not what the posted meant. So pashup shot. One shouldn't really take advantage of that. One should only be present at the chuppah part. Really, at the meal part is not appropriate. Are there any exceptions to this rule? Are there any times that a person is mamash allowed to go to a real chasana, the whole thing during shiva?
What if, like, you say to the guy you want him to be the photographer?
So yeah, if you really have a job and you're not really dancing and everything, okay, maybe that would be okay. So Rav Moshe has a famous tshuva about if a person is in Ovel and their own child is getting married. So Rav Moshe says that he thinks that not only you're allowed to go during Yud Beis Chodesh, not only you're allowed to go during Shloshim, you're allowed to go during Shiva also. Why is that? So Rav Moshe said it's a common refrain that we've been saying a few times over, that Avelus was given that it should be Memayit in the first Tanugim. A person is not required to be to have physical tzar or psychological tzar, emotional tzar, or perhaps sometimes even financial tzar, for the purposes of a hilchos avelus. So Rav Moshe said to tell a parent not to go to the child's chasana is the child's chasana is worth everything in the world to him. So haraya, people spend every last penny on the child's chasana. So Rav Moshe is right. You don't need a raya. It's pashut that a parent has to go to a child's chasana. So therefore, Rav Moshe says he thinks even during shiva it's mutar. And even the famous talk of Ramosha and Ma'aseh Shoya Kachoya, that's the din that's what we follow today. This talk of Ramosha that even Chmelo during Shiva, so a parent would be permitted to go because that's considered to be a terrible tzar. Outside of the realm of parents, so it's hard to say, what's the tzar. To be matir during Shiva would be very difficult. To be matir during Yud Beis Chodesh, if you really feel that it's a tzar, sometimes the talk will be a tzar for the whole. Because very often everyone's available. So let's say if so, it's one thing, and the parents will come to the chasana, but None of the uncles, none of the aunts, none of the cousins, none of the grandmothers, no one else is going to come to the chasna. So that sometimes will be a tremendous tzaras. I don't know. Each case has to be sized up appropriately. Within the sister of the base of Simcha, the idea of Simcha, you know, that generally speaking, the novel is not supposed to be involved in Yom of Simcha. So it never says the Feirish in Shulchan Aruch that novel is not allowed to the music. It doesn't say it. It's a Ramah. In the Simen, the Ramah says that the Ovel is allowed to go to the Chuppah, but he shouldn't be there when they have the Mizmeite Chazan Kala, when they have the dancing and the singing and everything, the music for the Chazan Kala, so the Ovel shouldn't be present there. So the Toskim write that you see from the Ramah that he assumes that the Davar Pasha, that Novel is not supposed to be listening to music. You don't see it more 100% from the Ramah. The Ramah was talking in the context of a wedding, but that's what generally, we assume that an Ovel should try to, as best as possible, try to stay away from music. There is a statement that appears in Masechet Machos that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch that an oval is also the simcha. So one of the things, not only is an oval also the simcha, but an oval, at least during Shiva, is not supposed to do things that will potentially put him into simcha. What could potentially put you into simcha? The holding a baby. So it says in Masechet Machos that an oval during Shiva shouldn't hold a baby. Because hold a baby, it's like, play with the baby, make funny faces at a baby. So that's going to lead the oval to Masechet Das from his Avela. So he shouldn't hold a baby during Shiva. So I've yet to see anybody quote this for Tisha B'Av. You're not allowed to hold a baby in Tisha B'Av. I think the answer is Pashut. That's during Shiva. So the Ovel doesn't hold the baby, so someone else will hold the baby. And then Tisha B'Av Kulanu Avelim. So who's going to hold the baby? No one's going to hold the baby on Tisha B'Av. So obviously, even though there's an Isra of Simcha on Tisha B'Av, the same way you can't learn on Tisha B'Av because there's an Isra of Simcha, but Afa B'Chein, this aspect of Simcha, well, Shemana Dovazem Yoyalim, that a person doesn't hold the baby in Tisha B'Av.
Does that mean if they don't have to?
It means if you don't have to, it means you...
That was one of the mother's. I mean, the mother has to
nurse the baby. No, it's a minachinami. If it's understood that the mother has to nurse the baby, so of course she's going to nurse the baby.
That's true.
So it means should a person just down be... It means should a person be bouncing around the baby for no reason? So, I don't know, maybe minachinami. There is? I don't know. I'm here all day, I don't know.
Is only during Shiva?
Only during Shiva, yeah. There is another Isser, which is also related a little bit to the idea of Simcha, that an Ovel is not permitted to get married. A person is not permitted to get married during Shiva, a person is not even permitted to get married during Shloshim. After Shloshim, so a person would be permitted to get married. The parameters of that in a moment. So here, when it comes to the Isser of getting married, so Chazal have an additional Isser, the Gemara that appears in Masechet Me'katan, which is a whole new category, where the Gemara says that if a person's wife passes away, so he's not permitted to get married for Sholosh Regolim. He has to wait 3 Regolim before he's permitted to get married. It only applies to when a wife passes away. So the Rishonim already bothered with the Kasha. What kind of halacha is this? We never find in Hilchos Avelos such a Shia. We know there's Avol Yom Rishon and there's Shiva and there's Shloshim and there's Chedish and there's Yachigar B'Chaveirav, but this one we never heard of. Shalosh Regolim, that plays any role in terms of Hilchos Avelos, and where do we ever find that there should be Avelos, more Avelos for wife and for other relatives? The whole thing doesn't make any sense. So a group of Rishonim, probably most of the Rishonim, came to the following conclusion. The Rishonim said that it must be that this Isser of not getting married for Gimel Regolim has nothing to do with Hilchos Avelos. This is not a Hilchos Avelos thing of din. You know what this is? This is to give the person a chance to recover, to give the Ovel a chance to deal with his loss for his wife before he enters into a second marriage. So it's going to be very bad if he's still thinking all the time of his first wife. It's not going to be good for the second marriage. So it's to give him a chance, to give him a regolem. What's to give him a regolem? How do the give him a regolem solve that problem? So either give him a regolem, give him a little bit of simcha in life, or to give him a regolem perhaps psychologically, help him that the hardest time for a person who's in Avelos is very often the Yom Tov. That's when families get together, that's when he remembers, he's reminiscing the most. So the 3 Regolim pass, and he's able to get past 3 Regolim, then he's ready to start with the second wife. So whatever the reason is, psychologically, so it has nothing to do with Avelos. It's not an Isra Avelos. That's why it doesn't apply to other relatives. It doesn't even apply to other V'imo, which is much more Chomer Avelos. And so the Shia has nothing to do, it's not an Avelos to the Shia. And other Rishonim say no, that it is a din of Hilchos Avelos. It is related to Hilchos Avelos. It's a unique, the Yaitim Naklal, a special Lanu Halacha called the Gimel Regolim. It only was said, Lagabi Ishtal. That's the Shail of the Rishonim. So there are enough Kaminas Adina, what the nature of the din is. Is it really Avelos? Is it not Avelos? So the Rishonim have a Shail of whether what counts as Yom Tovim for this. So we know that in Hilchos Avelus, Yom Tov does play some kind of a role. Yom Tov cancels Avelus. So Yom Tov cancels Shiv and Shloshim, so Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur also count. So some Rishonim seem to say that if a person's wife dies before Rosh Hashanah, so where the Gimel Regalim? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. That's a simple story, he can get married already. And other Rishonim said, if it would be Hilchos Avelus, maybe you'd be right. That three Yom Tov, three Regalim, and Dovah, finished. But it's not Avelus, it's psychologically. So 2.5 weeks passed, so he's all ready to get married again. It's not Shayach. So you need Gimel Regalim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. You need family Yom Tov. Rosh Hashanah and Kippur don't count. It has to be Regalim with a Simcha that works. There's a tea that appears in one of the Rishonim. There's something I had never seen. I found this the first time, I think 2 summers ago when I was in LA, when we were learning Hilchos Avelus. So I found this in the Tshuvos Maimonides. That's in the back of the Rambam, the back of the Tshuvos Maimonides. It's also one of the Rishonim, the unbelievable kula in this area of the waiting 3 months, to the three regalim. So apparently there was someone who's one of the Rishonim, his wife was, Maisa Shreider, his wife was sick for a long, long time. I don't know if it's hard to know whether he's describing the coma. It's hard to describe what exactly the story was, but it's quite clear that the husband and wife had no relationship as a husband and wife in any shape or form already for quite a few years. And then the wife passed away, and the husband wanted to remarry. So the shaila was, is the husband required to wait to give him a regalim? One of the Rishonim is quoted in the Tshuvos Maimonides saying that he's not required to wait to give him a regalim. Why? Because he doesn't remember his wife anymore. I mean, now his wife has physically been alive for the last 6 years, but for Maisa, he's already been misabel enough for the last 6 years. I mean, the extra couple of months, Gimel Regalim, is not going to make a difference in terms of psychologically. So, someone of the Rishonim was willing to be matir. The other Rishonim said, what do you mean? There's Avelus. There's Avelus. I've heard it's such a thing that if a person, it doesn't matter whether the person was sick, was well, was wise, it doesn't matter until the person dies, so the Avelus doesn't kick in. So, the Gimel Regalim don't stop. So, Maisa, we don't pass like that cool. That cool didn't make its way into Shulchan Aruch. This din that you have to wait for Gimel Regalim, so the Gemara itself gives a few exceptions to this rule. The Gemara says that sometimes you have a situation where there's a tremendous Shasachak, that the person Mamish has to remarry as soon as possible, and we can't tray around, we can't let him just wait for so long. So what could possibly be necessary for him to get married? But let's say he doesn't have any children, so he hasn't fulfilled yet the mitzvah peruvu. So that's a very important consideration. We want to get him to get married as soon as possible. Or let's say the person already has little children, but the children are little, and there's no one to be in the top with the children. So it's also important. Or Rishami adds on, Ein Lamishi Yisham Shenu. Even if he doesn't have little children, he needs something to take care of himself. The guy, he can't cook himself. He doesn't know how to do his own laundry. He doesn't know anything. He can't take care of himself. So Ein Lamishi Yisham Shenu. So you have these very, very pressing needs. So Chazal wa matir. The whole thing was only mitzvah. But in any way, Eimam of Eimam, the Chavu wa matir for Puravu, and they were matir it for something to take care of little children. They were matir it for Eimam Mishi Hashem Shana. They were matir it for a whole series of different things. Then the Rishonim have machlekesim about how much were they matir. Were they matir to get married during Shloshim also? Were they matir to have Bir Rishona during Shloshim? Were they matir even during Shiva maybe, some Rishonim seem to say? So again, there are different permutations along this a long, long Tosfos. Many of you may have seen the Tosfos that appears in the beginning of Masechet Tzubis, and again in Moikotan about the different machlekes in the Tam and the Ri about when this applies, doesn't apply, how far we're going to be master. But the one thing that we for sure master, the Gimel Regalim for sure falls by the wayside for these kinds of situations. Then the Rishonim added on other cases that don't appear in the Gemara. The only two that appear in the Gemara, the only two that appear in the Gemara are Banim Katanim and Purifer Rivian, and the Rishonim I think adds on. So the Rishonim made it on other cases. Let's say there was you had a situation where the guy was going to get called up to the draft. He was going to get drafted into the non-Jewish army, and the only way out was if he was married. So and his wife passed away a couple of weeks ago. So the Pesach could make on that also. That's more chashuv than Eimam Mishi Hashem Shenu. So they're making on that. So then the Ramah writes that the Olam is very, very making on this mitzvah. Every tzarech called him, any little tzarech, so everyone's making on these under three regalim mitzvah there. So why is that? But became so nachut, became so lenient. All of them became so makel and this is a so in a variety of reasons. So some people say it's papa wrong that the olim really was mezalzel in the system. They should really only be makel in the official cases that appear in the Gemara. And other people can try to be malamit chus in the minhag olim. Why the olim became so makel? So some say we live in a dark parus. No, we don't live in a dark parus. 500 years ago they were writing. So we don't want to take any chance. We don't want single men floating around waiting 6 months till they get married. It's not a good idea. So that's the Tzarech Gadol. And you see, Chazal will make it for Tzarechim Gadol. This is also Tzarech Gadol. I think it's a Nedri Yehuda, if I'm not mistaken, who has an unbelievable Kiddush. He says, no, the reason why the Olam is Mekel is like this. You're allowed to be Mekadosh in Isha. There's nothing wrong with being Mekadosh in Isha, because the Issa was a no sin. You're not allowed to get married, you're not allowed to have a chuppah until after the Gimel Regala. So, Kiddushin is Hetagama. All I'm going to have is Kiddushin. Once you have Kiddushin, it's not as that. We have a minhag that once you have Kiddushin, we don't let a woman just do Kiddushin walk around. We insist on having this woman right away. So in the olden days, we would remount the Kiddushin, and then we would tell them, now wait, so this will be regalim until you have Nisuin. But it's not as there, so the guy Kiddushin had the gomel, he's not planning on getting married, he's having Kiddushin. And once this Kiddushin, so never his hands are tied, he has to do Nisuin. So, lamdashah, whatever it is, whether the minhag is justified or not justified, the Ramah was made that in his days, that the olim was very nakal about this. Again, if there's a real tzarech, so then they're ground block, or if there's not such a big tzarech, so you find very very often you'll see second marriages very often will be right after Yontif. Why is that? So very often because that's when the Gimel Regalim are over. I mean, that tzak was given that they really should wait the Gimel Regalim. So very often the second marriage will be mamash right after the Yontif. There is another Isser that's a quasi Isser that, say quasi, we'll see in a minute, it's called Yitzimi Beisai, that an Ovel is not supposed to leave his house. So the reason why I didn't put this in the, when we spoke about the Shiva, is because this is also a type of an Isser that applies after Shiva. The Gemara says that Ovel Shavua Rishona, Eme Yitzimi Beisai, that the first week he doesn't leave his house, and then it talks about the second week, if he leaves his house, but he doesn't talk to anybody, then the third week he talks, he doesn't sit in his chair. It's all different gradations as to how long it takes him to get back into his regular role in society. So here also, this doesn't exactly correspond to the Shivish Loshim Yibesh Chodesh. These are Isurim, this idea of Yitzim Yipesach Beisa with all its parameters last even past the point of Shiva. So what does this mean practically for us? So in terms of Shiva, so the din is that Avol Eino Yotzei Yipesach Beisa is not supposed to leave his house. So the Ramah writes, quotes from the earliest Mishnah tradition, that this Isser, that Avol Eino Yotzei Yipesach Beisa, is not an Isser Gomer, like not taking a shower, like not learning, like not doing Shalom. What's he going to go in Pesach Beisa for exactly? To go to work, he's not allowed to go to work. To go shmooze, he's not supposed to be walking around shmoozing with anybody. So Chazal formulated and said, Avol Eino Yotzei Yipesach Beisa. Let's say Leitzi, a real, honest to goodness, valid Tzarech comes up, that he's permitted to do, so then there's no Isser per se of being Yotzei Pesach Beisa. It's just understood that you're going to be the Pesach Beisa. So that's what the based on this Ramah, that the Poskim are, many Poskim are lenient, but not there. You have a very common problem that relatives want to sit Shiva together, and sometimes there's pushing no room in the house, so the relatives have to go home at night. So, yeah, you should have to rely that the Olam is knowing Lahaka like the Ramah. So, Lachara, what you should do is, if it's necessary, if it's not necessary, so then one should try to stay put. But if it's necessary, so then one would have a right to rely on this Ramah that the Isra of any Yotzei Pesach Beisa is only if it's not Litzarech. But if it's a real bona fide Tzarech, like here, it's enhancing the Shiva, all the relatives want to be properly, want to be together, sitting Shiva together properly, so that would be okay. The Ramah himself quotes in the Tzumas Hadeshin that you should try to limit the excursions outside, even the justified ones, only to nighttime. Why is that? Because at night, there are less people walking in the street, so it means you have less chance you can start to schmooze with people. So I think that's what the Avelim should do also, that even the Avelim who are sleeping in other places, so they should wait until late at night, until everybody leaves, until it's, they shouldn't be spaziering around the street. They should go from the base level into the car, and then they should come back first thing in the morning. It shouldn't be a public type of thing that will lead to, they're going to be walking in and out of the car at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. They'll be schmoozing with the next door neighbor. There'll be things that will be inappropriate. So it should be following the guidelines of the Ramah if and when the real bona fide Torah exists.
Is it ideal for their coming to
the Shiva? It's a nice thing. I think if it makes for achdus in the family, I think it's something that should be encouraged. So sometimes it has to be encouraged at the expense of this Eino Yotzei Yipesach Beisa. So again, following the Ramah, that's not an absolute Issagam. In the Yotzei Pesach Beis of a Tisha B'Av, the Poskim have it the other way. The Poskim talk about, let's say the other wants to, let's talk about first going to Shul in general, then we'll get to this. So there was a big machlekes in the Rishonim, but this Isser in the Yotzei Pesach Beis, so does this really even apply to going to Shul? I mean, maybe it just means you shouldn't go into the Shuk, you shouldn't go to Shmuzim, but to go to Shul, that's okay. So that was the machlekes on the Poskim. So we try to avoid the Shiloh by bringing the Shul to the other. We try to bring make them into the base level to avoid getting into the Shiloh. Let's say you can't do that. Very often you live in a community where they barely have a minyan shul, so So, and they don't want to, for whatever reason, they don't want to cancel the shul's minyan, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, I'm not taking any stands right now. But the ma'isa, you have a situation where the minyan is going to be in shul, and there is not going to be a minyan in the Beis Havel. So what's the din? So then he tells him right, that then the other would be permitted to come to shul, because here, he's, first of all, it's tzarech, and second of all, it's faket, it's tzarech ha-meis, he's coming to Kaddish. So that's emuch ha-kavra meis gadol mizeh, so there would be grounds off of it, called the chayodom, that's the shas ochach. If there's no, if it's not feasible to make a minyan in the Beis Havel, so it could be that it would be permissible for the Avil to come to shul. Then the post can quote about an Avil going to a different Beis Havel. One Avil maybe put to go to a different Beis Havel. So it's, we try to avoid that bizman hazeh, but because we're not such a big menachem available bizman hazeh. But on Tisha B'Av the post can quote this. This is one of the grounds why it's mutter for an Avil to come to shul on Tisha B'Av, because that's like going to another Beis Havel. He's coming from his Beis Havel, his private Beis Havel, to the public Beis Havel. So Shibura quotes different minhagim, maybe only in the daytime because a lot of kinnis. At night he could just say echad himself. So different minhagim about this. But the basic heter of letting the avil come out on Tisha B'Av is an extension of this idea that the whole isser of Yetzirah Beis Havel is not an isser gamur. It's more of a hesek hadas me'aveilus. So therefore, if going is going to enhance the aveilus, so it's nishkafela. That's part of the story in terms of Tisha B'Av.
Why wouldn't
it be?
Why isn't
it that Abba doesn't transfer? It does. The base. Oh, I mean, why is there no? Why shouldn't we all be sitting sitting in the house in Tisha B'Av? From the stomach, we are doing this. We are, in a certain sense, doing that. Because what do we do in Tisha B'Av? Where do we go? We go to shul. You go to shul, so that's what tzarech is. That's like going to another base level. So where do you go to do malacha? L'maisa malacha, you are allowed to do it. You see, an Abba's not allowed to do malacha, so for him, he's not allowed to go to the shuk. Because in Tisha B'Av, you are allowed to do malacha. But in Nechinami, just Tisha B'Tzir and Tisha B'Av of Atzasar. So like that's probably, maybe that's the source for the Ramah. The Ramah writes, in Erev Tisha B'Av, you're not supposed to be Mitayel. The famous Ramah, you're not supposed to be Mitayel on Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. The Kal V'Chomer in Tisha B'Av itself, you're not supposed to take walks on Tisha B'Av. It's just time to walking around. So there's a shayla, how to read that Ramah? Because the Ramah is not clear whether he's referring to an Erev Tisha B'Av on Shabbos also. The Nafkamina was yesterday. If a person wanted to take a walk yesterday. So the Bricha Yosef quotes that quotes from some poskim that the Ramah meant even on Shabbos he shouldn't take a shpatir yesterday afternoon. It's not the time for tiulim. Not clear. But that's exactly what the Ramah says, but Bricha Yosef says that. There was a machlekes in the Gaonim already about whether an Avil is allowed to leave his house on Shabbos. Let's say, assuming that an Avil is not supposed to go. The shul, what about on Shabbos? So, if I'm not mistaken, the Ramban quotes from the Rav Haigon, who says as follows, it depends on where you live. Depends what kind of shul you live in. If you live in a big shul, so then it's asur. If you live in a small shul, so then it's okay. So what's pshat? Well, might not come either whether you live in a big shul, small shul. So it's very simple. If it's a big shul, there are 1,000 people there, there are multiple minyanim going on, so if you don't show up in shul, who's going to know that you're missing? Who's going to realize that you're not there? They'll think you went on vacation. But no one's going to talk about it. No one's going to notice you even. But if you're in a tiny shul, so every person counts. So there are only 11 people there. So now there are only 10 in Shabbos. Everyone's going to be talking. Oh, why isn't Reuben in shul? Oh, yeah, you know why he's not in shul? Because he's in Avil. He's enjoying Shiva. So Haigon says, it'll depend on each case. Is it really considered to be an Avelus before Hesi or not? Right, everyone knows who the Avil is. Yeah, I'm going to get the Avil to go to shul. We probably hope that would be like an Avil suppressor. Yeah, we assume that is it. Could be that meek, because then we hope it's supposed to even during the week to go to shul. That was never included in the Asarach. It's possible. So then the Gemara says, after the week is over, so then the Issi Yatim Beiso, that's a Beiso, falls by the wayside, but the extended Yisurim still continue. Eino Yashiv B'Mekomo, the Gemara speaks about, for the next week you shouldn't sit in your regular place. So we, our minhag is to extend that throughout the duration of the Avelus. That's the whole Shlosh, with the whole Yivei Chodesh, so the Avel doesn't sit in his regular Makom Kavua. We usually assume that means in Shul, he doesn't sit in his regular seat. He should move away a little bit from his seat. So the Poskim say that he should move not just an inch away, he should move that it's a Nikar. So part of the post talk, but when you have benches, so the guy moves down half an inch, you can't tell that he's moving. Where you have separate seats, so he's talking about, he's specifically the aisle, now he's next seat almost, so you can tell that he's changed the seat. So on Shabbos, there was a big machlekes apokim, there's an avel changes the seat on Shabbos. Part of the shaila was, that is it avelus for pehesia? Yeah? On the other hand, this may not be avelus per se. There's a Gemara in Basra that talks about it, sometimes you finish the levi, you can't have a kvura on Shabbos, but after the levi was over, sometimes you can have a levi very late in the afternoon Friday, they finished the kvura, now it's shkia. So the minig that they used to have of stops and starts, we do it before the kvura, but they used to have different things they would do after the kvura. So the Gemara seems to say you're allowed to do it on Shabbos also. And the Mechon Yosef writes, I it's avelus on Shabbos. So he said, that's not avelus, there's nothing to do with avelus. That's just part of the minhagim of kvura or something. It's not avelus per se. So therefore it's mutter on Shabbos. But folks, we have a whole discussion about this thing, this idea, this din of Mishana Makomo. Is this really a din? Is it really a din of avelus? If it's not avelus, and then maybe it's at the Gomer on Shabbos. So yeah, big machlokes in the poskim is, does a person supposed to change his seat on Shabbos, or he's not supposed to change his seat on Shabbos? So there is a fascinating story that Rav Shlomo Eger writes about himself, that he was the son of Rabbi Akiva Eger, and he writes that when Rabbi Akiva Eger was niftar, so he had the shaila, and he didn't know what to do. He didn't have to ask his father anymore. He didn't know what the din is. He didn't know how to be noig on this. Should he change his seat or should he not change his seat? So part of the shaila that made it even more complicated was that he was the rav now. So the folks can say when you're the rav in town, so then it's more for hesia. If you're a regular malabas, so people will think that you came late, so you're sitting in another seat. But if you're the rav and you have to pick your chair, move it 6 feet away, everyone will realize for hesia. So he wasn't sure what to do. So he writes that, I don't know if he was the first week when he was actually in Shiva, I don't know, maybe they had a minion in his house, I don't know. But he writes the second week, which is the Dina de Gemara of Eina Yoshev in Komo, so he didn't come to shul that Shabbos. He told everyone he was sick, but he didn't know what to do. He said, if he comes to shul and sit in his regular seat, he thought maybe a violation of the Dina de Gemara of Eina Yoshev in Komo. On the other hand, for him to come to shul and to switch his seat, he thought maybe a violation of the Din of El Sephasia. So rather than taking a stand on this issue, he didn't know what to do, so he stayed home from shul that Shabbos. That's what he writes about himself. So after the 2 weeks are over, so then it's only a minig. Then you get the impression that he didn't change it. That he wasn't, so the minig was looking to know, but the ikra didn't the Gemara, the inner Yeshiva Mekomo, so that he was concerned with. But putting aside that story, so for the whole shloshim, for the whole Yubez Chodesh, that minig is that we change our seats. So now we begin everything that we've been talking about up until now to try to plug how this all plays out in terms of Shabbos and Yom Tov. What are the halachas of Avelos, particularly concerning Shabbos and Yom Tov? So the Gemara tells us that there is this principle of Avelos of Hesed. It's a Gemara, a complicated sugi in the end of my katan, but basically it's all the dust settled. We paskin that Avelos is noek to some degree on Shabbos, but Avelos of Hesia is not noek. What does that mean practically speaking? So what are the Dvarim Shabbatina? Some of the Dvarim Shabbatina are the classic Dvarim Shabbatina, Tashmi Shamita, of course. There's an Issa Tashmi Shamita for an oval during Shiva on Shabbos, all the Terechitza, private washing, whatever kind of washing that would be. A lot of washing is also anyway in Shabbos, but that kind of washing that somehow wouldn't be a problem of Shabbos, so it would be potentially a problem, with Dvarim Shabbatina. And the Pashtus Talmud Torah is also Dvarim Shabbatina. Nobody knows whether you're learning or not. So the Pashtus Shabbat is that would be a problem, and an Ovel would not be permitted to learn on Shabbos either. So here the Rishonim point out that that's not always true, that sometimes you can have a case where Talmud Torah really will be a Dvarim Shabbatina. I tell him, Ma'aseh Shraya Kachoya, famous Ma'aseh with Rabbeinu Tam, that Rabbeinu Tam used to get Shlishi, he was a Rav, so he used to get Shlishi someplace other minig. And I guess we adopted that minig here this summer, I don't know why exactly, but I seem to have gotten Shlishi every week. So Rabbeinu Tam, that was a minig that Rabbeinu Tam got Shlishi every Shabbos. So when Rabbeinu Tam was in Ovel, so the din is that you're not allowed to give an Ovel during Shiva and Aliyah. If you give an aliyah, the curry, the ola has to read together with the bakari, so that's like Talmud Torah. So the gabbai knew the halacha. He knows you don't give an avel and aliyah, and you don't even give an avel and aliyah on Shabbos also, because that's Talmud Torah v'tzina. So it's v'tzina because no one knows that you're not giving a guy an aliyah because it's Shabbos, because he's an avel. So when it came to Rabbeinu Tam's aliyah, so. The Gabbai was not about to call up Yamel, Moreno, Rabbeinu, Rabbi Yaakov, and his father's the Rebbe. So the mayor. So they didn't. The gabbai was smart. The gabbai didn't call him up. The gabbai was yamel somebody else. So you know what Rabbi Natan did? He walked up and he took the aliyah himself. Pushed the gabbai away and he walked up and he took the aliyah. So he asked him afterwards, "We maratana Rabbeinu that Ofel's not allowed to get aliyah." So he said, "Yeah, but if I wouldn't get the aliyah, everybody I haven't missed this aliyah in 20 years. So everybody knows the reason why I'm not getting the aliyah is because I'm an Ofel. That's available for Hesya, so that'll be a problem. So if a regular guy, you know, says I want an aliyah." They say to him, "Don't kick for aliyah today. You know, why do you have to get aliyah? Nobody knows that you want aliyah. Don't make a fuss about it. So we won't give you aliyah and Shabbos. It'll be tzitzina, but if it'll turn out for us, then it's a problem." So based on this, to the yeah. So the guy gives the shiur time. So the emes is if a guy gives the shiur kavua, so it could be he may be mutter even to say it during the week because it's tzachi rabim. The Gemara says that tzachi rabim is doicha. Maybe doicha is in the veil. And then again, we don't do that. If he's a telling the shiur, I mean, if he's the kind of guy who he never misses the shiur for anything, I don't know, halavai. I don't know. Would it really be for Hesia? I don't know, maybe. It's a little tricky thing for Hesia, as Manas says. You said correctly. We all know who's the other. Everybody knows, but even though we know the other, there's still the demonstrations available for Hesia. Not that we're tricking anybody. We're not trying to conceal that he's not an other, but the public demonstrations are available, so a problem. So the post came out of Shai, well, let's say a guy, he's not Rabbi Natan, he's not the Rav who's getting the third aliyah, but he's a chiyuv. His wife just had a baby, or the yurtzeit or something, he's a chiyuv. So, avail for Hesia. So I think here also, it depends on the same way of Haigon said, it depends on the size of the shul here also. If you're in a shul with 1,000 people and nobody keeps track of who's yurtzeit, who had babies, there are 20 babies one every week, no one knows, no one knows. So, because this guy didn't get an aliyah, so no one's going to say, aha, he didn't get an aliyah because he's an awful. They're going to say, aha, he didn't get an aliyah because he doesn't have your site this week. But if you live in a place where there are 11 people in shul, and everybody knows everybody's business, and everybody talks about everybody's business, and everybody knows it, who he did. They've been planning, you know, he's been planning this your site, they know he has your site for the next month, when you live in that kind of a place. So if he doesn't get the aliyah, and everybody knows he has your site, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so Tata, everyone's going to say, oh, he didn't get the aliyah because he's an Ovel. So Avel Sefer Hesia. If everyone knows his wife just had a baby and he didn't get an aliyah, that's Avel Sefer Hesia. So Tata, it's going to change. So Avel Sefer Hesia is a very, very subjective. It's going to depend on the type of person, depends on the place, depends on the size of the shul, depends on a lot of different factors, whether that's called Avel Sefer Hesia or not. What are some examples of real Avel Sefer Hesia? So the Gemara speaks about Kfir Samita, that you have to set the beds back up. So I guess our equivalent, you have to take the and cover the mirrors, I guess. I mean, you should be that Kfir Samita. Or the Gemara says the Ilus of Sandal, the fact that a person doesn't wear shoes, that's also available for Hesia. The simple reading of the Gemara in my cotton seems to be that's only true if there are other people around. Let's say you're in the privacy of your own home and you take off your shoes. So why is that available for Hesia? I'm taking off my shoes. I would never walk around shul without my shoes on. I would never walk around the street without my shoes on. But in my own house, no one's around anyway. So I take off my shoes. What's the prehes exactly? Mm-hmm. It's usually not assumed that way. The minig is not that way. The minig is today that the Avelim wear their shoes even in their own house and shop. I don't want to throw into question that minig. Have you seen other ones? I don't know. But the simple meaning of the Gemara, the post can point out, doesn't sound that way. So to tell you the truth, I was... What?
Oh,
yeah. So that's what I was wondering. So I'll tell you the Maaseh last night. That's what I was wondering about. So we know that our minhag is that we keep our shoes on until Baruch HaMa'afil, even though the Isurei Tisha B'Av Pashim Shat Tzfat already at Shkia, because the Gemara says in Sachem that Tisha B'Av Ben Hashmash Shema Wasser. The Shaila. Why exactly when it says Tavit Rabban Lekula? But Lamaise doesn't answer that question. Suffik Tisha B'Av is Lechumra. So we're Machmer at the beginning of Tisha B'Av, then Hashmash is Zosar, and then Hashmash is Zosar, dissolve Tisha B'Av. So that's what the Ramah writes when Tisha B'Av falls out on either a Shabbat in Nitzko or on a Matzai Shabbat this year. So then you have to stop eating already before Shkia, because otherwise it's going to be Ben Hashmash. So what about the other Risurim? Pashup Shad is that all the other Risurim are also Noyeg. Pashup Shad is that you can't wash and you can't learn and you can't, whatever you can't do on Tisha B'Av, you can't do already Ben Hashmash. Pashup Shad. But what about shoes? My high shoes. Shoes is a problem. Why is shoes a problem? Because shoes is not only the Isra of Tisha B'Av, shoes is a demonstration of Avelos. So to take off your shoes when it's still Suffolk Shabbos, it's still Ben Hashmashos. How can you do that? So until Shabbos is really over, so Shabbos has to be over. Two things have to happen for Shabbos to be over. It has to be Tzeis Kichavim, and it has to be some Havdalah, Baruch Hamafa, Lebaruch, something, some kind of something to indicate that Shabbos is basically over for us. So that's where this tricky Ramah comes from. The Ramah says that on the one hand, we won't let you eat during Ben Hashmashos. On the other hand, you mechuv to eat during Ben Hashmashos. So I'll tell you what happened. So last night, what happened? So we benched by Shalosh Shudas, 15 minutes before Shkia. Everyone went back to the bunks, whatever they wanted to do, mouthwash, wash their face, whatever they wanted to do. And then everybody came back to the Kollel dining room for some Debris Ayurus and Miras, you know, whatever was appropriate for that time. So what did I do at that time? I sent my wife to put her kids to sleep. So I was standing in the bunk for about a half hour, and I'm watching it getting darker and darker and darker. I'm standing there, me, my wife, and my kids in the bunk. And my kids kept on asking me, is it Tisha B'Av yet? Is it Tisha B'Av yet? So I said, it's Tisha B'Av already. So my Yaakov asked me, is it still Shabbos? I said, it's still Shabbos. So he asked me the multi-million-dollar question, how can that be? I said, it's a good kasha, but I'm not working on that right now. So, Lamdusha, that's his kind of kasha. So, Safi L'chumra both ends. So I was thinking to myself, you know, what kind of Farhasi is this for me? I'm staying in the bunk. I'm by myself. Maybe this by my kids. But after the kids fell asleep, I'm standing there in the bunk and watching and waiting to look at the clock to see when it's the time to go for my roof. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe I should take my shoes.
Who's?
Shabbos between me and you. Shabbos is technically over already. If I taste kecham ready anyway, you know, mikra din. And even if it's not taste kecham, but it's still been a shmashos. So why would that be a farhesia? I was thinking to myself, yeah, this is what the Gemara says, but the Olam, for whatever reason, doesn't, is it? No, I just said, I don't know. So, to shave out that's odd, if I couldn't bring myself to take my shoes off on Shabbos, and I kept my shoes on.
It
could be that, because it's already Safek Tisha B'Av. So the whole reason why, when you have a whole shul, you have everybody together in shul, so you can't have everybody take off the shoes together, because that's available for Hestia. But then I was thinking to myself, Lo Shemana Dov Zemei Olam, do we have a fine for the guy's home? The guy's home in Tisha B'Av, you know, before Myra, that he takes his shoes off. Is that a Shema? I don't know. Well, people do that. I don't know. I don't think that the Olam does this. I don't know. I think that
you put him back on to go to shul?
Yeah. So you have to take it off now and then put him back on to go to shul. Or really, that was ready. If it says, I don't know. No, the mice take it somewhere. For better or for worse. Right. You mean in theory on Shabbos you could wear and still most Shabbos shoes I still think a leather. No, I don't know. Depends on the definition of Shabbos shoes though.
Okay.
I think for
if you could find Shabbos shoes that were
I don't think you're gonna have to go. I think it's still shoes somehow, Nimna Vagam with shoes that's the Farhasya somehow. That's become the Farhasya. The Gemara talks about that being the example of Farhasya. So again, basic guidelines in Tifer Shabbos, we know it's basically Tinnah for Hesed, and then you have to sometimes work around to sort of figure out what is really Tinnah and what is really for Hesed. But one thing that Shabbos does not do, Shabbos does not cancel Avelis. Not only does not cancel Avelis, it cancels Avelis. It's one of the 7 days of Avelis. This is in contrast to Yom Tov. Yom Tov and Shabbos are fundamentally different, that Yom Tov does not count towards Avelis. So in the following community, Yom Tov doesn't count as Avelis. Yom Tov cancels Avelis. Well, Yom Tov only cancels Avelis. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yom Tov cancels Avelis if the Avelis started from before Yom Tov. But if the Avelis didn't start, let's say a Kova makes a regular, a person buries the mace, and Yom Tov a Flamoid, so then the Avelis doesn't count in the sense of that you only start counting the Shiva after the Yom Tov is over. The Shabbos and Yom Tov are fundamentally different. That Shabbos is Ol L'Minyan Shiva, it counts for the Shiva, and Yom Tov does not count towards the Shiva. Could be because Shabbos and Yom Tov are very different, because the Simcha, other reasons, some Rishonim say it's just a technicality, because if Shabbos and Yom Tov are really the same, some Rishonim, the Ramban writes, and Shabbos and Yom Tov are mamash the same. The only thing is that if Shabbos won't count towards Shiva, so then you'll always have 8 days of Shiva, so to speak, because every week, every 7 days, has one Shabbos in it. So when the Chachamim formulated, when Moshe Rabbeinu formulated the Takana of Shiva Simei Avelis, so it was understood, built into the system, that Shabbos didn't count. Whereas Yontif, you don't have a Yontif every time. But when you have a Yontif, so Yontif won't count. So Yontif and Shabbos are different in terms of Avelis, but what's unclear, and it's a big machlekes in the Gemara, about what's the din of Dvarim Shabbatzina on Yontif. How do you have a case of Dvarim Shabbatzina on Yontif? So if Yontif was canceled, the Avela from the Shiva's Ola, finished. So let's say a person is Kovah Mesa Beregel. So he buries his Mesa on Thursday Chalamayit. So now he's in limbo until after Yontif. So the Shiva starts after Yontif. So on Chalamayit, or on the last days of Yontif, is he also do anything? Is he allowed to wash himself? Is he allowed to whatever you would novel would not be permitted to do? The Dvarim Shabbatzina Noeg and Yontif, or do we say that Yontif is Lengamri different? There's no Avela's cues on Yontif. That's Machlekes the Rambam and the Ramban. Aminig is that there is Avelos. We paskin that there is Avelos of Dvarim Shabbatzina on Yontif. So let's say that kind of a case, so the other wouldn't be permitted to be together with his wife, those kinds of things. There are some Acharonim who say that Limud HaTorah is different. That the Avel on Yontif, even though he's quote unquote the Avelos, he's Kovah Meis of a regular, and he's technically being known as Dvarim Shabbatzina, but Talmud Torah is different. Talmud Torah is allowed to learn on Yontif. Why is that? Manishtan Talmud Torah from other things. So some Acharonim say, but the Isser of Talmud Torah is not so much Hilchos Avelos, it's more of an Isser Simcha. Because the Kudesh Yom Yishom Yisam Chilev, so it's an Isser Simcha. On Yontif, the Ovel is allowed to be in Simcha, because Asi Simcha the Rav, Medochi Asi Diyachir. So the Ovel Lamaisa does eat Tosav Yayin on Yontif. He's observing Simcha's Yontif. So how can you turn around and say that he's observing Simcha's Yontif, but he's not allowed to learn? It's a Spearman Eobay, so Talmud Torah is the one exception to the rule. That's what some Acharonim write. Other Chachamim have an unbelievable chav. Other Chachamim write that Chamtzi writes like this, that what do you want the Avel to do exactly on Yontif? You want him to learn Dvarim HaRoyim? You're going to tell him on Yontif, Simchas Torah, he should then Pesach, Shavuot, he should sit and learn only Yirmiyo, only Eicha, only Hilchos Avelos. How could you tell a guy on Yontif that that's a bitul, that's Gufa Isser on Yontif? Now I'll learn those things on Yontif. So I think you have to qualify with this Chamtzi saying, Lo shemano dov hazeh meyolam, you're not allowed to learn Eilu Magalchen on Yom Tov. Lo shemano dov hazeh meyolam, you're not allowed to learn Hilchos Avelos on Yom Tov. I think what he means is, to force a guy, Dafka, to learn these things, that's like a bitul of Yom Tov. You can't tell somebody on Yom Tov that it's also to learn everything else, and you're mechuyif to learn the Dvarim HaRoyim. Because Dvarim HaRoyim, if you choose your Seder Limud, you happen to be learning my Kotlin, that Yom is learning my Kotlin, so you're enjoying learning my Kotlin, okay, no problem, that's your enjoyment. But to tell a guy, close your Baba Basra, close your condition, and only sit and learn Hilchos Avelos and learn Eicha and Kinnis and Dvarim HaRoyim Shabiriya, so that's Osir on Yontif. To do that would be like an Isra of Simchas Yontif, a Bitl of Simchas Yontif. So comes the Chacham Tzvi and says, so what do you want this guy to do exactly? So you tell him he can't learn Maseches Kedushin because that's an Isra Al Tzavelos. You're telling him now he can't learn Dvarim HaRoyim Shabiriya because that'll be an Isra of Simchas Yontif. So what should he do? Yoshe Botel? Lo shemano davazeme olam, that we should require somebody to be Yoshe Botel, not learn at all. Chachamim never would have created an Isser of Talmud Torah and Tisha B'Av if there wouldn't have been the Heter of Dvarim HaRoyim. That's the Yisrael of Chacham Tzvi. That not Shayach that Chazal should have ever created a day that you're not allowed to learn Legamrei. The only reason why they asked the Talmud Torah on Tisha B'Av because they gave us a chance to learn Hilchos Avelos for 6 hours. I mean, they built into the system the Heter of learning to learn the Dvarim HaRoyim. But to create a day where you can't learn anything, not Shayach that a Jew should have a day that he can't open up a Sefer in some shape or form. Good Musa for all of us. So a variety of these svaras, some poskim are willing to make of that on Yontif. So serious maybe the fact that the Rambam holds that the Dvarim Shabbatzina are also not noeg on Yontif. So Talmud Torah, Makom Mitzvah. So they're a ground law. But the other Dvarim Shabbatzina, Tashma Shemita, Mechitza, other things like that. So really, the Avel on Yontif would not be permitted to do.
According to the first svar, shouldn't it also be mutter to learn Torah on Shabbos?
There is one day in Rishonim that says that. That's mutter. So the question is, so the conclusion you have to draw is that you are allowed to learn the Dvarim HaRoyim on Shabbos, which is what the Ramah says in Ofer Tisha B'Av. Because in Tisha B'Av, like yesterday, the Ramah said you had to learn the Dvarim HaRoyim yesterday afternoon. So you see, to learn the Dvarim HaRoyim on Shabbos, that's not so bad. Learn the Dvarim HaRoyim on Yontif, that would be bad. That's a Chiddush.
Well, they won't say the same
thing from Shabbos and Yontif? That's a Shaila. That also says there's no Simcha on Shabbos. That's part of this whole discussion about the Dvarim of Shabbos and Yontif, whether they're the same or not.
And also the point that, sorry, The Gemara used that for all the
Yeah, I don't know. The Gemara used it across the pasuk Vidush Hashem Zem Chalev by Tamatara. Different, I don't know. Anyway, Akopar, whatever it is, the when it comes to Shabbos, so the demarcation is clear between Dvarim Shebetzin and Dvarim Shebehetzin. We're not sure. Certain things are a little bit tricky to know where they fall into, but at least if there's a difference between the two, that's clear. We put pasuk that way in the Gemara. And when it comes to Yom Tov, so that was Machlokes the Rambam and the Ramban and Shulchan Aruch, we pass that the Dvarim Shebetzina are Nayeg. There is a very unique type of a Yom Tov, which anyone wants to begin with Sefer Ksubis, so I'm familiar with. That's the Yom Tov of the Shibisime HaMishta. So the unique status of Avelos for a Chas and Kalach. A lot of persons in the middle of Sheva Brachas and they lose a relative, so how does that play out in terms of Avelos? Yeah, the Gemara has the very famous halacha that a person is preparing his wedding. He's preparing everything, all the foods for his wedding, and then Nebuch right at that point. So Meisav Shachas and Imashal Kala. So the Gemara says the show goes on, the wedding goes on. Why is that? The Gemara explains how you do a whole complicated sugya that you have the wedding first, you have the obilus mitzvah, and then afterwards you curve a semei. So again, a lot of lumbus in that sugya. That's already not for Tishba, but for another time. But the bottom line is that the wedding goes through. Why is that? Why is Chacham so make us let you go ahead and do something to delay the kvura and to do something that aninus that you wouldn't normally do? And what's this all about? So Chazal were concerned with two things. They were concerned, number one, with hefta meruba. It cost a lot of money. Got the whole wedding preparations ready. And number two, they were afraid that if it's avim shachasim and imah shalkala, so somebody, there won't be anyone around to be metapel with the chasim and the kala. And the next time around, so if you're going to throw out all the food and have to start all the makeup and all the preparations from scratch, and 6 months from now, so a combination of those two factors, Chazal will make it. That's why Chazal will only make it by the avim shachasim and imah shalkala, not any other relative. So the Shach writes that this man hazeh, this din doesn't apply, because the Shach says that this man hazeh, the community will take over, that someone will step in for the Yisomim, don't worry about it, we don't have to rely on this kula anymore. So Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva that this man hazeh, this man hazeh, the Shach's chumra doesn't apply. He says that forget, that this halach has gone through little changes. In the days of the Gemara, it was only Aviv Shachas and Imash HaKala, but the Shach said even that doesn't apply. Now Rav Moshe says this man hazeh, even other relatives it applies. Why? Rav Moshe says, in the olden days, how expensive was a wedding? You shechted a few animals, you had a little bit of wine, a couple of loaves of bread. $100 for the whole wedding, how come you could call stuff? So Chazal weren't willing to be makel just to let you have the wedding just for Hefzer Merubah. They insisted only if it's a combination of Hefzer Merubah plus Avim Shechas and Imash HaKalva, there's no other option. So then, and only then, those two mitigating factors that were master to get married basically during Aninus. Whereas this man is Rav Moshe, it's a lifetime investment, a chasen, $100,000 is going to go down the drain. So Rav Moshe says, "B'chiyah gav, we could be made even for a shakrov, if you can pull off such a stunt, if you can do it, that if it happens at this point, they're right about to have the wedding, so you would go through with the wedding first, you would put the levaya on hold, and then after the chasen, the couple will be together, both the mitzvah parish, and then once they become married, so then the shivasim mishta anoyek first, they bury the mace right away, right after the chasana, and first they observe the shivasim mishta, and then they observe the shivasim avelus. So they end up in effect with the week of Sheva Brachas first, and then afterwards they have the week of avelus. Very, very mashuna big case. Shouldn't hear some such tragedies. There are Moshe's tshuvas about. Let's say the couple doesn't want to do this. Let's say they just can't. They can't bring themselves to do it. Can't they? Can't. So I'm a chuyuf to do it, but. But in theory, Chazal gave you a kula that sometimes in the very, very difficult situations, one would be permitted to do so. There is another important halacha in terms of Yom Tov as it relates to Avelos that we've alluded to before, that Yom Tov cancels Avelos. What that means is that whatever stage of Avelos the person was at before the Yom Tov came, so Yom Tov knocks that out. So what does that mean? So if a person was in the middle of Shiva, so comes Yom Tov, knocks out the Shiva. Simchas Rav and Zeichel the Avelos of the Yachid. If a person is in the middle of Shloshim, comes the Yom Tov and cancels the Shloshim. Yid Beis Chodesh, it doesn't work. Yid Beis Chodesh, it doesn't say, what kind of joke is that? Yid Beis Chodesh. Him, Cain, Ein, Lecha, Yid Beis Chodesh. Those are singing Yid Beis Chodesh anymore. So that's clearly not applicable. Shiva and Shloshim, so then that's the din. And as long as the Avelos started beforehand, so then the yontif can't. With that condition, that the avail is really started. So it means that the kahura has to have taken place before yontif, and it has to have enough time that the avail really befall niyub mamish neg availus. So you had a strange case that Rishonim described, that sometimes they would have late in the afternoon erev Yom Tov, we're trying to finish up the Levaya, and the basic Kvaras HaGofen was out of town, so they wanted to make sure that the Avelos would start before Yom Tov, so that the Krovim would just pop there, they didn't have to observe the Avelos after Yom Tov. So they would, and very often the basic Kvaras was Chutz L'Tchum anyway, so they weren't going to go bury Chutz L'Tchum. So what did they do? So they would send the Arum to Goyim. I mean, there was something that we were like thinking a million years of doing. The Rishonim described this, that they would send the Mahag told us about this. They would send the Aron off late in the afternoon on Erev Yontif, because the din is that Kvura on Yontif Rishon was Mutar Yedei Goyim. The Shem is Mutar Yedei Yisrael, but Kvura on Yontif Rishon was Mutar Yedei Goyim. So they would send the Aron. So what would they accomplish by that? So now the relatives would turn around and they'd say, "We're leaving. We're not going with the Aron anymore because we can't go anyway. It's too late. Can't go chutz l'tchum on Yontif." So they would turn around. At that point, that would be Achzaras Panim, what we spoke about earlier on today. So that's like the equivalent of Kvura. At that point, they would take off the shoes, they would sit on the floor, they would start the noise of Avelus. That was an hour before Shki, and then come Shur, become Shki, and that would cancel the entire Avelus. So they would in fact create, in a sense, a fake Kvura. It's a lace bread. There was no choice, because the only way to get the Kvura done was after the Yontif started. So the Avelum would be Machzip in Nehem, and they would have the opportunity to befall, literally, physically begin the Avelos, and then once the Avelos start, Yontif would cancel it. No complicated Lamdish Shaila, but the Tiv had again, it's also not related to this. Not really a Tishrav topic, but just because it's related to the Avelos, and the Tiv had a Shaila, and a woman ben Shlech, her of Yontif early, it's now before Yontif, the Makabal Yontif early, and then she got a telegram that a relative died. So Shaila is that called? So the din is that if you get a telegram that your relative died, they were already buried, then you start observing Avelos at that point. So the Shaila was, is that called that Yontif had already started? So she had ben Shlecht early, it was only Tosefes Yontif, so maybe it's not really Yontif, that's a lumdus Shaila in terms of Vichos Tosefes Yontif. But putting those wild Shailas aside, the normal klal is that as long as the Kvura took place, or the equivalent to the Kvura, that's as part of the Mechayiv of Avelus started before Yontif, then comes Yontif and cancels whatever stage of Avelus that the person is up to. There's a din that, let's say
cancels for Kabbalah?
The Shaila is, it could be that you could still be knowing Avelus even though you're in Kabbalah, let's say. So Lamdash Shaila to put this up as Yontif, and then that's it. The Gemara has an interesting din. The Gemara says, let's say a person's kavur is makes of a regel. So we said that the days of Yontif can't count towards the Shiva, because Lamaisi, you're not really being Naig Shiva, you may be being Naig Bamshu Tzinna, but Lamaisi, the Shiva counts, the Shiva only starts counting if the Yontif is over. But the Shloshim starts counting right away. So Mudna thing. Normally you have that the Kavura starts everything rolling at the same time. You have the Shiva and the Shloshim starting together. The Shiva ends after a week, and the Shloshim ends after 30 days. So here the Gemara says that the Shloshim starts before the Shiva starts. Because why is that? The Gemara says that Shiva, you can't really be Nogig Shiva on Yom Tov. But Shloshim, you can't be Nogig on Yom Tov. Why is that? What are the Nihugim of Shloshim? So the Nihugim of Shloshim are very similar to what the Nihugim of Chol HaMoed are. What are some of the things you're not allowed to do during Shloshim? You're not allowed to take a haircut. You're not allowed to get Chol HaMoed. You're not allowed to wash your clothes. You're not allowed to wash your clothes either. So the Gemara says that the Yemei HaMoed, the Yemei HaRegel, Oilel Minyan Shloshim. Strange type of a scenario. Then you have a whole series of different halachas in terms of Cheshbin Yom Tov. The Gemara says that, let's say a person started counting Shiva before Yom Tov, now comes Yom Tov and cancels the Shiva. So the Gemara says that even though, let's say physically, on the calendar, you only count for 3 days, but whenever the Yom Tov cancels Shiva, so we call that 7 days. That's already considered to be 7 days counted towards the Shloshim also. Now the Yontif itself is considered to be a week or so. So even if the Yontif itself is only 1 day, say it's only Shavuot, it's 1 day. So that counts up the halacha like 7 days. So yeah, he's only been in Avil for 2 days on the calendar. He's already halfway done with Shloshim. So Yontif counts as a double cheshbon for this. The Yontif canceled the Tzedek cancels the Avelos and it counts for 7 full days of the Shloshim. And then the Yantav Gufa counts as well. And the Gemara is another Chiddush that Shemini, if it happens Erev Sukkot, so Shemini Atzeres comes and is a regular B'frei Atzmo, counts as a whole other 7 days. So the guy Motzoi Simchas Torah, so he just lost his relative 8 days ago. He's already holding by day 23 of Shloshim. So that's the Gemara says, the Koyach of Yantav, so it counts as a whole week in and of itself. There is a other unique din that applies, that happens all the time, in terms of Yantav Sheni. Let's say a person is Kervis Mesa Beregel. So he doesn't observe real Avelos, he keeps some of the Dvarim Shebetzinah, but he doesn't start to count until after Yantav is over. So the Rishonim say the following Chiddush when it comes to Yantav Sheni. So Yantav Sheni can count as the first day of the Shiva. How can Yantav Sheni count? You're not going to be Noeg Shiva. Well, Misafik, maybe you should be Noeg Shiva, because we don't know whether Yantav Sheni is really Yantav or not. So we have to play it safe on both ends. So we tell you not to be Noeg Avelos. L'chumra, you have to not be Noeg Avelos. On the other hand, you can then turn around at the end of the day and say, well, maybe I should have been Noeg Avelos. So remember, we learned from the Rabbi, if you miss a day here or there, it doesn't matter. So even though you missed the first day, you weren't really Noeg Avelos. It doesn't matter. It counts as the first day of Shiva. So it comes out, halacha l'maisa, we pass like this in Shulchan Aruch, that if a person dies on during Chol HaMoed, buried in Chol HaMoed, so with his Yantav Sheni, so the Yantav Sheni is the first day of Shiva, and then there's only 6 subsequent days of Shiva, since the last day of Shiva is not a real day anyway, so it's only a mixed in with Kulo, so there are really only 5 days of Shiva. So that Yantav Sheni works both ways. That's a lot of lumbus in the Rishonim, is not a type of disasre. Is it Chol or is it Yantav? So that's really for another time. Why that's not a problem necessarily if that's disaster. So Aloch Lemaisa, we pass to this Chat, this Kunz in terms of Avelos of Yantav Sheni. Okay, maybe we'll take a little break now. Okay, and then we'll hopefully have the last installment.
We'll get to the Shalom Shalom.